You know, there are multiple ceremonies within the Church of God that we are all familiar with. Many, if not all of you in this room or within earshot of my voice, have been involved in at least one of those ceremonies. It was baptism. Baptism, going into that watery grave, coming out in the laying on of hands. Others have been involved in the ceremony of marriage within the church. Still others have been involved with the blessing of little children. We have probably witnessed and been to at least one or more funeral ceremonies that the church has had or conducted for some of its members throughout the years. But when we view the ceremonies of the church, we are reminded that we are preparing for the most solemn of all of the ceremonies embodied within the Church of God, that being Passover. As part of that very moving evening, we will perform a ceremony within the ceremony that has tremendous meaning and ramifications. In fact, I would submit to you that our attitude towards that particular ceremony says a lot about the mindset that we need to have before we ever even enter into the room to partake of the Passover this year. As I said, this ceremony within the ceremony says a lot about who we are. It says a lot to God the Father and Jesus Christ about the type of leader that we want to be in His family. This ceremony parallels the very same act that our Savior Jesus Christ did with His apostles on the evening of His final Passover. I would submit to you that it is summed up in one simple statement by him. Let's turn over to John chapter 13 and verse 14. In the Gospel of John chapter 13, we find the recording of this ceremony of foot washing. It has been part of our ceremony of Passover, again, from the earliest time when we look at the Passover ceremony and we come before God and we come again into that particular moment in time when we are partaking of those symbols, when we are again renewing our vow, renewing our covenant that we made with God at baptism. Foot washing is part of what we do. It is a, as I said, ceremony within the ceremony. We find here in John chapter 13 one simple statement in verse 14 that I believe sums up the statement that is made by Jesus Christ. Notice verse 14, "If I then, your Lord and teacher, have washed your feet, you also ought to wash one another's feet." Seems like a simple statement. From a physical perspective, it's nothing more than physical foot washing to the world around us, but there is something more that is meant by this particular statement, because this statement comes at the end of the act that he did with the apostles on that particular evening. And it has tremendous ramifications. And if we lose sight of those ramifications, we lose sight of the importance of this Passover, and we lose sight of the importance of the attitude that we must have as we come into Passover and to partake of the Passover. I'd like to talk about that this afternoon. The title for the sermon this afternoon is, "If I Have Washed Your Feet." If I have washed your feet. What did he mean by this statement? What did he mean by you ought to wash one another's feet? What is the symbolism? What do we learn from it? Because in verse 14, we come to the end of what had just happened and what had just occurred. If I have washed your feet, what are we to learn from this ceremony within the ceremony, the most solemn ceremony of the year that we will partake of, and that is Passover? Let me take you back for a moment. Let me ask you the question, do you remember your first Passover? I remember my first Passover. I was 6 years old. Now, in case you're thinking that I'm a heretic of some sort and I was baptized when I was six, that is not the case. But years ago in the church, there was a time when Mr. Armstrong thought that we should include our children with regards to the Passover. While they would not partake of the Passover in terms of the foot washing or, again, taking in the symbols, by being there and by being a part of the Passover service, by observing that at some point when the time would come for them to make a decision about making a commitment to God, they would think about that Passover evening, they would think about what they had seen, and it would make the process or the decision for them a little bit easier in terms of, am I ready to be baptized? Now, I think it was all well-meaning, but again, it was an understanding that at 6 years old, I don't really know that you can understand fully and completely what's going on. But again, I remember observing the events of that evening. It's somewhat fuzzy in my mind. The whole subject of foot washing, again, through the years, has somewhat been sometimes fuzzy, and it has changed again from what we had originally done. I remember, again, Mr. Franks talking about a discussion that was had in the Council of Elders in our former association back in the late 1990s, and there was not an agreement because some had been doing it different than others with regard to foot washing. There were some that were including the unbaptized or those that had not been baptized and even older teens to participate in the foot washing. There was a discussion about that, and again, the decision was made that you cannot separate the foot washing from the whole of the Passover service. In other words, you cannot compartmentalize and simply say that foot washing is only for foot washing can be for anyone, but the body and the blood, the bread and the wine, is simply for those that are baptized. You can participate in this, but you can't participate in this. So we came to an understanding that you cannot compartmentalize foot washing, and that is truly clear when you look at the ramifications of what we're talking about with regards to foot washing and understanding fully and completely what it is. There were others that felt that foot washing was at the wrong time in terms of how it was laid out in the Passover service, that it should actually be done after the taking of the symbols, after the taking of the bread and the wine. But again, when we put all the scriptures together and we take a look at everything that we have in the gospel accounts, we find that the service that we have, that we have had for, again, decades, going all the way back to this particular time when Jesus Christ kept the Passover, that final Passover with his disciples, is the way that it should be with the foot washing. And then, of course, the taking of the bread and the wine. Now, I do remember my first Passover service. My first Passover service as a baptized member of the church, I remember in 1985. Now, again, I had been a part of the church from the standpoint of having grown up in the church, but I also realized that at that first Passover service, as I was getting ready for the foot washing, I was a little bit nervous. I had grown up in the church, but I had never done it before. What was I supposed to do? As the person was hiking his pant leg up to his knee, was I supposed to wash his leg all the way up to the knee? Was I supposed to go in between his toes? Was I supposed to try and get the calluses off his feet as I was rubbing? Was I supposed to make sure that all the nasty sock lint was all out from between his toes? You laugh because you get my point. You were all there once before. So as you're down there on your knees, you're kind of glancing over either side. Like, what are they doing? What are they doing? I was so consumed with the physical part of it, again, you come back to a realization over a period of time, you understand what foot washing truly is. Now, foot washing is something that is actually practiced in mainstream Christianity to some degree today. It has been perverted and has been changed over time, but it is actually kind of interesting when you take a look at comparative religions to see what some religious denominations or some beliefs do in terms of actually having some form of foot washing. Let me share some items with you from a perspective here on other mainstream Christianity or other denominations. This is from Encyclopedia Britannica. Here's what they write. Foot washing, also called washing of feet, a religious rite practiced by the hierarchy of the Roman Catholic Church on Maundy, Thursday of Holy Week, that's preceding Easter, and by members of some other Christian churches in their worship services. The early Christian church introduced the custom to imitate the humility and selfless love of Jesus, who washed the feet of his disciples at the Last Supper. Now, I take exception with imitate. Again, because you come back to an understanding, as we'll see here in a moment, about what foot washing actually is. And it is not an imitation. It is something that must be from the heart of the individual. Again, he talks about washing the feet of the disciples at the Last Supper the night before his crucifixion. The practice was originally an act of hospitality in Palestinian homes performed for guests who wore sandals and walked on dusty roads. It was done by a servant or the wife of the host. St. Paul refers to the custom in 1 Timothy 5, verse 10, and St. Augustine mentions it in one of his letters about 400 A.D. The Maundy-Thursday ceremony observed in Rome by the Pope and locally in parish churches first appeared in the Spanish liturgy of the 7th century. Going on, it says, in several European countries, the monarchs or members of the royal family washed the feet of poor people and gave them gifts on Maundy-Thursday. The royal practice was continued for a time in England after the Reformation, but ended in the Church of England in 1754. So you can begin to see how things just sort of move from ground zero, and again, 31 AD, and move out from there, and you see how error comes into teachings. Foot washing is generally still practiced in some Episcopal churches. In the Mennonite Church, it is considered an ordinance or symbolic practice and is done periodically throughout the year. Let me share with you what the Catholic Dictionary says, one particular couple sentences here. It says, the principal priest or prelate of the church, assisted by deacon and subdeacon, washes the feet of 12 poor men. The Pope washes the feet of 13 poor persons, all of whom are priests. From the Catholic Encyclopedia, in 694 AD, the Seventh Synod of Toledo commanded all bishops and priests in a position of superiority under pain of excommunication to wash the feet of those subject to them. So under the Catholic, again, the 17th Synod of Toledo, I would be responsible for washing everybody's feet in this room. And if I did not do it, I could be disfellowshipped from the church. This is, again, how the Catholics, or at that particular moment in time. Now, I share this with you because, again, as I said before, we have to come to an understanding of foot washing because it sets the tone and the mood and what we are doing in terms of our role in God's family. You see, foot washing and understanding foot washing helps us to understand our purpose. It helps us understand our calling. It helps us understand our full potential. That potential is being leaders to serve with Jesus Christ in the millennium. Now, we don't always make the correlation because we get locked in on Passover and we get thinking about unleavening, we get thinking about getting the crumbs out of the car seat, we get thinking about all these areas that we need to de-leaven. But sometimes, again, we let things go and we need to think about them, meditate on them before we come into the Passover service, before we partake of it. Again, being the type of leaders that will serve with Jesus Christ. Under that auspice, let me share from the book Lead Like Jesus, whose authors Ken Blanchard and Phil Hodges. They have a quote in that particular book, and I'm going to share an excerpt for you. The quote from the book is the following, and I think it encompasses what we come back to understand. It says, they said the following, you will never become a servant leader until you first become servant to the leader. Let me state that again. It is important. You will never become a servant leader until you first become servant to the leader. Now, they expound in the book, and let me share this small blurb from the book with you. They said the following. They said, the issue of submission to Jesus Christ as master is central to our discussion. You and I do not naturally submit to anyone or anything. How true that is. Insist that I be your slave, and you have a civil rights case on your hands. And I would add attorneys probably lining up to take your case. American history illustrates what happens when one human enslaves another. We resist submission to another person with every fiber of our cholesterol-free lifestyles. In a culture where the individual has reached godlike status, submitting to anyone or anything outside of ourselves is beyond reason. Self-interest soars high above service in our hierarchy of interests. These attitudes are part of our cultural thinking. They are also the very feelings that prevent us from knowing the freedom that comes from giving ourselves to Christ. If you desire to lead as Jesus led, you must desire first to follow Jesus. This is how leadership training among God's people begins. So essentially, the statement is being made, you can never be a leader until you first become a servant to the leader. I want to follow that up with a statement by a leader that was selected by God. To the best of my knowledge, Ken Blanchard and Phil Hodges are not members of the Church of God. While that is an interesting statement, and I think we would agree with most of what is said there, let me share a statement by a leader that was selected by God. This is from the correspondence course, circa 1958 to 1962. This is Mr. Herbert Armstrong writing. He said, "When God created man, he formed man of the dust of the ground. Man was made of matter, the clay model. God is now creating man in his own image spiritually. When God created the first man, Adam, he was not yet complete. Man was made carnal, material, but he was made to need the Holy Spirit of God. Without this spiritual life from God, man experiences a sense of emptiness, a hunger and thirst for that which satisfies. This very lack from within him gives him an innate inferiority complex. He senses his inferiority as compared to God, his lack of what he was made to need, but not understanding what it is, he seeks to quell the painful sense of inferiority by conceit and blowing up the ego self with vanity and self-exaltation." In other words, there's a hole there, it has to be filled, and it gets filled with conceit, ego, self, vanity. He goes on, "This vanity then is a substitute for God and his Spirit. People surround themselves with this self-love and self-exaltation as a defense mechanism against this painful sense of inferiority and insecurity. Vanity, therefore, is the chief ingredient in human nature. Vanity blinds a person to the reality of who they are, and there is only one way to extricate yourself from this terrible blindness." We come back to understand that we are fighting with human nature, and an understanding and a realization that if we view the Passover service apart from foot washing, in other words, understanding the real meaning behind what Jesus Christ was commanding us to do, as I have done, therefore do to one another, we lose sight of the importance ultimately of our future, our destiny, and what is in store for us. Being able to be a servant leader, being able to understand the need to be a servant leader before we can ever be leaders in God's family. Let's take a look at Mark chapter 9. We're going to begin to take a look at some things here, especially in Mark chapter 9, that help us understand, again, in my opinion, what it was that Jesus Christ was trying to get across to the apostles that evening when they were partaking of the Passover, when they came into that home, when they came into that building, and when he washed their feet. Again, it was a custom that we realize is something that happened and occurred, but there's more to it than that. When we understand the components of what was going on, this is important to understand. This is important to understand before Passover. It's important to understand before we ever partake of the bread and the wine. Notice Mark chapter 9 in verse 30. He said, "Then they departed from there and passed through Galilee, and he did not want anyone to know it. For he taught his disciples and said to them, the Son of Man is being betrayed into the hands of men, and they will kill him. And after he is killed, he will rise the third day." Now, statements being made as they're passing by the way. What's their response? Verse 32. "But they did not understand this saying and were afraid to ask him." How many times does that happen, right? A statement is made, someone says something. I wonder what he meant by that. Did he mean the following? Well, why don't you just raise your hand and say, excuse me. What was it exactly that you meant by that statement? Could you explain what you meant by that statement? But they didn't do that. They did something else we find here beginning in verse 33. Then he came to Capernaum, and when he was in the house, he asked them, "What was it you disputed among yourselves on the road?" Now, he had perfect discernment. He already knew what they were disputing. He wanted to hear them say it. Now, it's interesting as we go through this particular passage of Scripture that in one sense, he makes a statement, the Son of Man is going to be killed, he will be killed, he will not rise until the third day. They don't understand what that means, they're afraid to ask, but they had no problem disputing amongst themselves, who's going to be greatest? Well, it's going to be me. I was the greatest fisherman. I brought in all the catches all before we ever came in. I was more successful than any of you. No, it had to be me. Had to be me. I was the tax collector. I was a publican. I dealt with the things that were white collar. You're all just blue collar fishermen. They didn't think to ask, what did you mean by that? It was more important for them to dispute who would be greatest. But they kept silent, verse 34. For on the road they had disputed amongst themselves who would be the greatest. Verse 35, and he sat down, called the 12, and said to him, if anyone desires to be first, he shall be last of all and servant of all. Interesting, they never said what it was they were disputing. I told you he had perfect discernment. He knew what they were arguing about. Verse 37, whoever receives one of these, he talks about the little children in my name, receives me, and whoever receives him, receives me, but him who sent me. So there's an understanding that goes along with what he was talking about here, that they did not have the meekness of a child. They did not have that understanding of what it meant to truly be a servant. That if you desire to be first, if you desire to be the greatest, it will not work. It will not work because the person who desires to be first is ultimately going to be last. The person that is ultimately last is ultimately going to be first. Let's move on to Mark chapter 10. Mark chapter 10, we find another situation here again with the disciples in which two of them are going to make a request. Now, you look at this story, you read this passage of Scripture, you've read it how many hundreds of times before, and I would submit to you these two had to have some gumption. I mean, to be able to sit there and make some statements that they did as they were talking to Jesus. Notice beginning in verse 35. The sons of Zebedee, verse 35, Mark chapter 10. Then James and John, the sons of Zebedee, came to him saying, teacher, we want you to do for us whatever we ask. Christ said, okay, what do you want me to do for you? Verse 37. They said to him, grant us that we may sit one on your right hand and the other on your left in your glory. Well, it wasn't his glory they wanted. They wanted their own glory. They wanted to elevate themselves. Grant us that we can be sitting there equal with you, one on the left and one on the right. Interesting that they didn't say, you know what? These two individuals over here should be people that should sit with you in your glory. These two individuals over here, these individuals would be the perfect people to sit with you in your glory. No, it was about them. It was about them. It was about what they wanted. Jesus Christ would answer them saying, you have no idea. You cannot enter into what I have to do. You do not understand the full scope, the full context, the full meaning of what I have to do. Now, in their minds, they saw it. They saw glory. They just wanted to be on either side of it. They didn't fully understand. Drop down to verse 41. And when the 10 heard it, they began to be greatly displeased with James and John. Yeah, probably because they hadn't thought about it first. Stinkers, they got to him before we did. But Jesus called them to himself and said to them, you know that those who are considered rulers over the Gentiles lord it over them, and their great ones exercise authority over them. Yet it shall not be so among you, but whoever desires to become great among you shall be your servant. Remember that word, servant. And whoever of you desires to be first shall be slave of all. For even the Son of Man did not come to be served, but to serve and to give his life a ransom for many. It is interesting to note that we saw one recording there in Mark chapter 9. Who is going to be greatest? They were arguing and disputing amongst themselves. He wanted to know what it was. They would not tell him. He knew what it was. In Mark chapter 10, we have the same situation. This time it's escalated to another level where two individuals, specifically by name, are saying, we want to sit with you in your left hand and your right hand. We want the glory. We want to be with you in your glory. The debate about the greatest crept in again with the sons of Zebedee. Jesus Christ would use that to explain to them the wrong sense of authority that they had grown up under, that they had seen with Roman rule. They had seen how the Romans ruled. They had seen how the Gentiles ruled. And he said, that is not the way it is. He was trying to show them that there is a different way. He who wants to be first will be last. He who is last will be first. He kept explaining it to them. Their sense of authority ruled their thoughts, and as an end result, it ruled the actions in part. Grant us that we may sit at your right hand. There was no humility there with James and John. It was all take and get for self. Let's go over to Luke chapter 22 for a moment, just pick up one verse. To me, it's one of the most tragic things that we look at from the standpoint of the gospel accounts, at least in my mind. It's something that makes me take pause, especially when we're talking about this subject today. Again, not just today, but something that should be on our minds, I think, again, as members of God's family. Understanding our full potential, understanding our calling, understanding where we are going in the future. And again, understanding the meaning, the deep meaning of the foot washing ceremony within the Passover service. Luke chapter 22, and notice verse 24. Again, Luke's recording here. He says, now there was also a dispute among them as to which of them should be considered the greatest. And I want you to think about that for a moment. You said, well, yeah, but you already read that. They already had this contentious attitude. We already saw that back in Mark chapter 9 about who would be greatest. We already read that in Mark chapter 10 about James and John, the sons of Zebedee, wanting to sit the left and right hand of Christ. What's the big deal about this one verse? Go back to verse 13 through verse 20. I won't read it. It's Luke's account of the recording of the symbols of Passover. If the chronology is correct here, here they are arguing about who would be greatest after they had been given the symbols for the New Testament Passover. You begin to see the level again of problem that exists. As the disciples clung to their idea that Christ would assert his power and take his position on the throne of David, they're arguing amongst themselves about who would have the highest place in that restored kingdom of Israel. They didn't get it. They had placed their own estimate upon themselves of self-worth. Instead of regarding each other with higher esteem, each had placed themselves first. Brethren, simply put, they did not have the humility of Christ. They didn't have it. Now, in certain respects, this is sad, but the greater problem that I see from this particular situation that I would submit to you is they had witnessed for 3.5 years his teachings. They had seen eyeball witnessing of the events. They had seen the miracles. They had seen the power that he had when he healed people. They had seen his mercy. They had seen his compassion. And at the end of it all, they were consumed with power, place, and authority. I would submit to you it is a cautionary tale for any of us in the church. We need to think deeply about the attitude and the humility of Christ. It is not something we put on every time of the year once a year as we get ready for the Passover, as we get ready for the foot washing, as we get ready again to partake of these things that are so important and meaningful. Let's turn to John chapter 13. Let's go to the actual foot washing service and let's spend some time going through the foot washing service. Perhaps as we go through this and we explain it and expound it a little bit, it will give us a level of understanding concerning Jesus Christ instituting the foot washing ceremony. He had explained it to them in words. He had explained it to them about who would be greatest in the kingdom. They were not getting it. So he was going to do something very vivid and create a situation in which they would go through an exercise and show them what it meant that the first should be last and the last first. He was going to show them what it meant to be a servant leader. Obviously, the words were not impacting them enough, so he was going to use a physical exercise. Let's begin in John chapter 13 and verse 1. He says, "Now before the feast of the Passover, when Jesus knew that his hour had come that he should depart from this world to the Father, having loved his own who were in the world, he loved them to the end." Jesus Christ had full knowledge of his divinity. He had full knowledge, again, of being part of the royal family, spiritually speaking, of the God family. He also understood that he had to set all of that royal regale aside. Now think about it for a moment. We think of royalty. It's a little bit of an imperfect analogy, but again, I'll try and do it from the standpoint of, again, painting a picture in the 21st century. When we think of royalty today, we often think of the royal family. The one that comes to mind, having spent time in Canada, is the Queen of England. When you see Queen Elizabeth at these certain events, or when you see them there at Buckingham Palace, and when she's seeing individuals, they're coming before her, whatever it might be, and you've got the robes, and you've got the crown, and you've got the scepter, and she sits on that chair that probably, if you sold it, would pay your mortgage for the year. You get my point. And when she's traveling anywhere, it's the best of everything. And when they're staying anywhere, it's the best of everything. And there's a servant or someone to look over everything and every aspect of their lives. Again, as I said, the trappings of royalty. Now, it breaks down a little bit from there because we understand that God, the Father, and Jesus Christ are not looking and do not have these physical things. But I think you get my point. Understanding that here is the creator of the universe. By and through all things were made. The Son of the living God. He's setting it all aside. He's setting it all aside. Not only to be a servant, but he is going to show the apostles that he is going to be the lowest of all household servants. You see, it was a common practice in this area of the world for a pot of water to be at the door, and guests that would come in would have their feet washed by the lowest of the servants in the household. We don't have that problem when we come before each other on Passover evening, do we? Because we've already taken a shower, we've already taken a bath, we've checked really hard, we've taken out 40 grade sandpaper and tried to sand down the calluses on our feet. We don't want people to see that. We take more time preparing our feet for Passover probably than any other time of the year, because we're having other people look at them. But think about if you were there foot washing in 31 AD. What would it have been like? They didn't have cement sidewalks. They didn't have asphalt streets. They didn't have the shoes and socks that you and I wear today. They had sandals. It was dusty. It was dirty. It was nasty. They may have been walking around a whole long time. You know what your feet are like when you've got them in your shoes. You've been walking a while. You take your shoes off and your wife says, "What's that smell?" That's why Dr. Scholl's made so much money with odor eaters, you know, to take up the smell. You've got these nasty, dirty, dusty feet. People would enter in, and the lowest of the servants in the household. You might have had a number of servants, maybe 10, 12, who knows? But it was the lowest of all the servants in the household that was responsible for washing the feet. Here Jesus Christ is painting a vivid picture. Now they knew that. They knew what the custom was. You get the sense when Jesus said, "And whoever desires to be first among you, let him be your slave, your servant." They didn't get that point, but he was saying, "Let me demonstrate to you what I just said. Let me demonstrate to you what I mean by that." It's interesting when we come in here, we find no recording by John that not one of the disciples, because they understood and knew what that pot of water was for at the door, and not one of the disciples came forward and said, "Jesus, let me wash your feet." They did not. So he would begin this poignant demonstration of what a true servant does. Let's pick it up in verse 2. "And supper being ended, the devil having already put it into the heart of Judas Iscariot, Simon's son, to betray him, Jesus, knowing that the Father had given all things into his hands, that he had come from God and was going to God, rose from supper and laid aside his garments, took a towel and girded himself. After that, he poured water into a basin and began to wash the disciples' feet and to wipe them with the towel with which he was girded." Now, again, we're painting a picture here. Can we begin to understand the magnitude of what has just happened? Jesus Christ, part of the God family, has stripped himself of any privilege of power, of authority, and made himself the lowest of the servants in the household. Here is the creator of all things, made by and through him. Here is the word that has always existed. And he is emptying himself completely of that, getting down on his knees and washing their feet. Let's draw an analogy once again using the royal family. If you've ever seen the Queen in her limousine, you know it's a Rolls Royce limousine, probably worth several hundreds of thousands of dollars. And as she's driving through the streets with her crown or tiara, whatever it is that's on, and waving to the crowd, imagine that there's a blowout of one of the tires on that Rolls Royce. She gets out, she gets the jack out, and changes the tire of that limousine. Do you get the point I'm trying to make? If you've ever had to change a tire, it's usually a dirty, nasty job. It's not pleasant. Imagine, again, washing the feet of not one, but all of the disciples that evening. The point that we get back to, again, is he washed everyone's feet that was there. He did not do one person and say, "See what I did? Okay, now I want you to split up into pairs, and you guys wash each other's feet." He went around and he washed everybody's feet. And not once in John's recording do we have any of the disciples stepping in and saying, "Let me help you. Let me help you. You shouldn't be doing this. You're our teacher. You're our Lord. You're our master. Let me assist you. Let me help you." Let's pick it up in verse 6. "Then he came to Simon Peter. Peter said to him, 'Lord, are you washing my feet?'" Am I seeing this correctly? Are you washing my feet? Verse 7, "Jesus answered and said to him, 'What I am doing you do not understand now, but you will know after this.'" Now, Peter, in perfect, again, put mouth in gear before engaging brain. Verse 8, "Peter said to him, 'You shall never wash my feet.'" He had no clue. He had no understanding at this particular point yet what was going on. "Jesus answered him, 'If I do not wash you, you have no part with me.'" If you do not understand the purpose of this exercise, You never truly can be with me as part of my leadership going forward after my death. Peter was being told in gentle terms that he had to surrender his pride and surrender his self-will. He did not understand what it meant to be a slave first, leader second. We don't know if Peter's feet were in the first or in the middle of the last of all of the apostles and disciples' feet that were being washed. But we do know one thing. He did not understand the lesson. Why? Because he never offered to wash the other disciples' feet. We also know that for another reason. Verse 9. Simon Peter said to him, "Lord, not my feet only, but also my hands and my head." He did not understand. Jesus Christ was showing them humility in action. He was showing them what a true leader in God does, in God's family does. All Peter saw was the physical act. And he said, "Well, if it's the feet, then let's just wash everything. Let's get the legs, let's get the arm, let's get the elbows, let's get the neck, behind the neck, let's get everything. Wash my head too." Peter was the kind of guy that would look on the package of a bottle of Tylenol where it said, "Take one pill every 4 hours." He'd say, "Well, if one's good, I should take six. That would be really good." He didn't get it. He did not understand. Peter did not see the imagery that Christ was showing. Verse 10. Jesus said to him, "He who is bathed needs only to wash his feet, but is completely clean, and you are clean, but not all of you." For he knew who would betray him, therefore he said, "You are not all clean." There are two statements, or two things from this statement that's made by Jesus Christ that we come to understand. Number one, we have to believe there was an attitude of the disciples being humbled by watching the Lord and Master that they had been following for 3.5 years wash their feet. They had to be humbled by that. There's no question about that. But there's also another point that's important for us with regards to our Passover and our foot washing. We can see from John's account that Judas was still in the room when Jesus said this. So it would be safe to assume that Jesus had washed the feet of Judas Iscariot as well, his known betrayer. Now think about that for a moment. Let that rattle around in the gray area for a moment. As we get ready for Passover, as we get ready for foot washing, and as we think about wherever we're at, is there someone in our mind that we simply say, "I hope I don't get their feet to wash"? Maybe we don't say that. Maybe we simply say, "I'd prefer not to wash their feet." Jesus Christ was willing and did wash the feet of his betrayer. What does that speak to, and what does that say about his attitude? What is the lesson for us in terms of humility? It's something, again, for us today to think about. Let's pick it up in verse 12. "So when he had washed their feet, taken his garments, and sat down again, he said to them, 'Do you know what I have done to you? You call me teacher and Lord, and you say, well, for so I am. If I then, your Lord and teacher, have washed your feet, you also ought to wash one another's feet. For I have given you an example. I've given you imagery. I've been teaching you this and telling you this for 3.5 years, but now I've showed it to you. I've given you an example that you should do as I have done to you. Most assuredly, I say to you, a servant is not greater than his master, nor is he who is sent greater than he who sent him. If you know these things, blessed are you if you do them." Do you get the point that he was trying to drive home? After Judas had left that room that night, the 11 remaining disciples were, in a sense, clean. Now, what do I mean by that? Well, they were in a different state of mind from where they had been before. By example, they had had it impressed upon them what it meant to be a servant, a slave to the master. The depth of humility to witness your Lord, your teacher, your master, watching everyone's feet was a vivid memory for them to have in their mind. By witnessing him stripping himself of royal privilege, he showed them what it meant to be a servant leader in God's family. And brethren, I would submit to you, unless we have the attitude of a servant leader, we cannot fully comprehend and understand what it means to partake of the bread and the wine after the foot washing. Because there has to be that level and understanding of humility. We understand the deep meaning of the Passover service with the inclusion of the foot washing service. We understand that the person that we follow in the flesh, God in the flesh, Jesus Christ, made himself to be a servant. That word servant in the Greek that we read throughout the New Testament is the Greek word doulos, D-O-U-L-O-S. It means a bond servant, a slave. Jesus Christ made this statement. You don't need to turn there. Matthew chapter 20 and verse 27. He said, "Whosoever will be chief among you, let him be your servant, your doulos, your bond slave." It means you cannot, we cannot become a servant leader until we first become servant to the leader. Turn with me over to Philippians chapter 2. Philippians chapter 2. Notice beginning here in verse 2. He said, "Fulfill my joy by being like-minded, having the same love, being of one accord, of one mind. It is my hope, it is my prayer that we all come together on Passover, not just in the Northwest in the congregations that I pastor, but all around the world on Passover, we come together of one accord, one mind, one faith. And we all have the attitude of a bond slave." Let nothing be done through selfish ambition or conceit. Who's the greatest? Who's going to be in charge? But in lowliness of mind, let each esteem others better than himself. Let each of you look out not only for his own interest, but also for the interests of others. Let this mind be in you, which was also in Christ Jesus, and I would submit to you, that is the mind that we have when we wash one another's feet. We are showing the level to which we will go to be a servant in God's family. Because that is the example that Jesus Christ, our Savior, gave us. To have the proper attitude and the frame of mind. "Who being in the form of God did not consider it robbery to be equal with God, but made himself of no reputation, taking the form of a bondservant, a slave, and coming in the likeness of men. And being found in appearance as a man, he humbled himself and became obedient to the point of death, even the death of the cross." That is the attitude that the Apostle Paul spoke to the church, to the Philippians. It is recorded for us today. It is no different for us in 2019 than it was for them when he wrote it. The attitude of mind must be exactly what Jesus Christ was trying to impress upon the disciples that evening when he washed their feet. Remember that statement. You will never become a servant leader until you first become servant to the leader. We read earlier in the account in John that Peter didn't quite get it. He wanted all of himself washed. Did he get it? Let's turn over to 2 Peter chapter 1. I think we already know that, but let's read just one verse that I think will solidify it. 2 Peter chapter 1 and verse 1. Notice the greeting that he starts this letter with. Simon Peter, a bond servant, an apostle of Jesus Christ. First and foremost, he lists the fact that he is a bondservant, a slave of Jesus Christ. He didn't start with his office. He started with the attitude and the frame of mind that he had been called to be a doulos, a bondservant, a slave. Peter got it. He got it. You see, brethren, we cannot just take the bread and the wine without the understanding of our role in God's family. We have been called to be bond slaves, servants, doulos of the Most High God. Peter finally got it. Do we get it? Will we get it? Brethren, as we get ready to partake of our Passover, let us remember again to continue to examine ourselves. Yes, we think about the body. We think about the blood. That bread and that wine which we will partake of once again this year. But let us not forget the first part. The ceremony within the ceremony, so to speak. I submit to you that it is a key part of our Passover. For without it, Jesus said, you can have no part with me. Therefore, let us remember his loving admonition. If I then, your Lord and teacher, have washed your feet, you also ought to wash one another's feet.